Welcome to The Author Meets the Critics, where today's guest is Ira Wolfert, the Pulitzer Prize foreign correspondent, author of a new novel called An Act of Love. Our critics are James Michener, Pulitzer Prize winner himself, author of Tales of the South Pacific, and W.G. Rogers, book review editor for the Associated Press. But first, meet the man who keeps the peace on these programs, John K.M. McCaffrey.
Good afternoon. Many of you remember Ira Wolfert's best-selling factual accounts of war in the Far East, Battle for the Solomons, and American Guerrilla in the Philippines. Perhaps you also remember his novel, Tucker's People. It's just been made into a motion picture, Force of Evil, starring John Garfield. In Mr. Wolfert's new novel, called An Act of Love, the author tells the imaginary story of the impact of war upon the heart and spirit of a young American. Harry Brunner, a naval pilot, was blown up in a sea battle and washed ashore on a South Pacific island. An old native woman nurses him back to health. Although the Japanese held the far end of the island, around Harry there was no peace. But within himself, he knew no peace at all. He could not look back at the past, the sinking of the ship and the white puffy face of the friend he had not saved. He could not look ahead at the prospect of having to fight again. When the Andersons, an American family still clinging to the island, took Harry in, their daughter Julia deepened his conflict. Trapped in unbearable tension, it was only when the war itself reached the island that Harry, through sacrifice, resolved his conflict. That's the story in brief, in very brief. And now let's hear from our critics. First, the well-known book reviewer for the Associated Press, Mr. W.G. Rogers.
I want to tell about two big surprises. The big surprise of the closing 1948 literary season was that Mr. Ira Wolfert wrote a bad novel. The big surprise of the opening 1949 season is that Mr. James Michener mistakes it for a good novel. An Act of Love is about two kinds of things, action and explanation of action. The actions, like the sinking of a ship and the invasion of an island, are vivid and dramatic. It's the explanations to which I object. Practically no one does practically anything in these practically 600 pages without stopping to explain it. If a character so much as lifts a finger, it is because of his Jewish mother. It reminds him of his dead sister. It symbolizes race hatred. It means he doesn't love the girl. It proves he is a deserter. It betrays a domineering nature. It is a mark of his animal spirit. It shows he should never get married. It all reminds me of, say, the six pills which the druggist drops in the bottom into a bottle. They don't even cover the bottom. So he fills up the rest of the bottle with cotton. Mr. Wolfert's pills are just what the doctor ordered, but there's too much cotton in the wine.
Well, and now with a wholly different point of view, another veteran of the Pacific and a Pulitzer Prize winner for his own novel of war in the Far East, Mr. James Michener.
I've had the good luck to be able to review on this program several books of merit. But today I have a greater desire to communicate enthusiasm than ever before. That's because I speak with envy, for Mr. Wolfert's book is about the South Pacific. And as Mr. McCaffrey pointed out, I also wrote a book about that part of the world. And I have a feeling that where I stopped writing, Mr. Wolfert begins. He has more realism of detail than I had. His characters are more deeply rooted in the jungle than mine were. His battle scenes are more comprehensive, more securely tied to human emotions. And I am embarrassed to have to admit that the intellectual implications of his book far exceed the intellectual quality of mine. You can guess that I read every page of Mr. Wolfert's book with double or treble scrutiny. I wasn't disappointed. He did a fine job. But to make the discussion more pointed, let's forget my personal feelings. This book is a big, heavy, involved psychological analysis of what's wrong with our American civilization. It's a book with an important purpose. It probes deeply into the conflicts of contemporary man. It compares favorably with my two favorite modern American novels, Robert Penn Warren's All the King's Men and James Gold Cousins' The Just and the Unjust. I sometimes think that any reader who got past third grade in school occasionally ought to try his mind on something vague and tough and important. Well, here's a fine book to start on, because Ira Wolfert's An Act of Love deals with big themes in a big way. I enjoyed testing my mind against his, and I think many other readers will, too.
There's our difference among the critics, and now before we give Mr. Wolfert a chance to strike back, here's your announcer with a special message.
The Author Meets the Critics would like to suggest that you help the disabled veterans to start 1949 with new ideas and new interests by sending them a new book. Most of us are looking forward to a year of activity and adventure. But the veterans in the hospital are still looking forward patiently to getting well. Cut off by hospital walls from family and work and play, their activity is limited to their minds. Now, this is especially true of the spinal and tubercular cases immobilized in bed who are avid readers. Halloran Hospital on Staten Island has many of these men, and the big army library which Halloran inherited is not enough. The veterans, like everyone else, are eager to read the latest books. Like everyone else, they're drawn to a book by the author's reputation, by the fact that thousands of other people are enjoying it. The veterans of the First World War do not want to read war books, but the men who've come out of this recent war, handicapped and temporarily unable to share in the world's work, are anxious to read the war novels and personal experiences of battle. Any book that absorbed or aroused you recently will do the same for them. Why not share it? Later in the program, we'll tell you where to send a book. And now, here's John McCaffrey.
Well, now, Mr. Rogers, do you want to take Mr. Wolfert's book out of this cotton protective layer that you've spoken about and enlarge your objections a little further?
It's so difficult to get at this book through this cotton protective layer. That, I find, is the trouble with it. Mr. Michener pointed out that the book had social significance, significance for us as Americans. In other words, that the book was written with good intentions. And I agree with that. I think Mr. Wolfert's intentions were admirable, and I find too often novelists' intentions are bad. But good intentions, in the case of Mr. Wolfert's book, it seems to me, have paved the way to a bad novel. He labors his point too much. He says the same thing over and over again. Take the central case of the two young people, Harry and Julia. Harry Brunner is a naval lieutenant, 6 feet 2 inches tall, I think, dropped down in the South Pacific. Julia is a beautiful 19-year-old girl. Here you have a vigorous young couple in the middle of a plantation, in the middle of a jungle, in the middle of an island, in the middle of the Pacific, with no one around to say them nay. And what would you expect would happen? Well, the thing you'd expect would happen does not. There are five different scenes when Julia practically begs Harry to embrace her. And Harry says no every time. Now, I understand why he does it. He does it for this reason. He is worried about his status as a man who belongs in the Navy but who has been separated from it by chance. Until he can straighten out this question of his status, he doesn't feel free to enjoy his life here in this oasis of peace. If Mr. Wolfert had said that once, I would have said that's quite acceptable. Mr. Wolfert says it five times in five different scenes that amount to nearly 100 pages or 50 or 60,000 words.
Mr. Michener, do you want to comment on this Adam and Eve situation?
No, Mr. Rogers is also a writer. As I remember, he wrote a very good book on Gertrude Stein. I think
everybody's taken care of now on plugs.
All right.
Okay.
That's very important because I want to speak as a writer here. You know, Mr. Rogers, that when a man finishes a story or a treatment in words, the appalling feeling comes to him after it's done and in print that he just began with his characters, that he said something about them, but that the real character, the realness of the person, the springs that made him operate have not somehow or other got onto paper. I have that feeling consistently, and it's depressing. And yet when I read this, granted that Mr. Wolfert goes around corners and everything to get at it, when he's through, I feel that he has actually tried to speak of human beings in their nakedness of soul, as it were, and he has done it where other people I read have not done it. And that seems to me a tremendous accomplishment. If it takes words to do it, they're words well spent.
Mr. Rogers, what about the fact that although we have Harry Brunner here in the jungle on the Anderson's plantation, that all through this book, Mr. Wolfert has tried to relate Harry Brunner to his background, relate Harry Brunner to his life in the United States, to what had created the Harry Brunner who appears on the Anderson's plantation. How successful, Mr. Rogers, do you believe that is?
I don't think it's successful at all. I think, as I said at the start, I agree with Mr. Michener and with Mr. Wolfert that there are some extraordinarily good sections in this book. Particularly those sections, especially, and I might say only, those sections which deal with warfare in the South Pacific on land and on sea. But when it comes to integrating the actual experiences of Harry Brunner as a pseudo-deserter, with his status as a man in society, I find that Mr. Wolfert means well but fails. I don't think that there's a... I appreciate he felt that it wasn't worthwhile doing a novel unless he tried to do a novel that said something that mattered to him, and that's fine. Too few novelists do. But I don't think that the thing that matters to him comes through in this book successfully. Or when it comes through so belabored, so troubled. It comes to us so many times over and over again that I get discouraged.
Mr. Michener.
Now, if you wanted to get at that subtle spirit of just soaring quality, you wouldn't write a novel. You'd write a poem in about six lines. And I'm sure that if you took a genius, Shelley or Keats, he could have written everything that Mr. Wolfert says in about 10 lines of poetry. But it wouldn't be a novel. A novel is that form of art which takes the time and the words and the expense and the money of printing and everything and the reader's time and expense and probes deeply in under the surface and lays bare the most casual bits of causation. That's what a novel should be. And when it doesn't do that, it isn't a novel, it seems to me. And that's why I speak with a certain envy about this, that Wolfert took the time to elucidate these principles that men work on. I think the war parts of this book are exceptionally good writing, but I'd hate to have them stand for the novel. Anybody, I think, taking the time and having had the experience that Mr. Wolfert has could write almost as good stories about warfare as he did. But it takes a man with a real emotional and psychological drive to waste his time and his energy and his spiritual quality to probe in under these people to try to find out what makes them live. The fact that a cruiser was sunk is of no psychological meaning. The fact that out of it some men have certain experiences, that a Negro who doesn't like America anymore just lets himself drift off over the side, and you're given the reasons why he does it. That's something big to me, I think.
Well, now, Mr. Michener and Mr. Rogers, Mr. Wolfert has been bouncing up and down and pointing to himself over there, and having known him on the Author Meets the Critics as well as in other ways for so long, I'm sure I can't contain him any longer, so the floor is yours, Mr. Wolfert.
I think Mr. Rogers' difficulty is that... He is interested in one story in this book, and he's not interested in the other story. There are two stories in the book. The one you call the six pills, and the other you call the cotton. The cotton story, to use your term, is the one that I was most interested in telling. And that is the search of a man for integration with the society in which he lives. You and I have a different concept, I think, of what people are. My conception of people is that they are capable of everything. Of everything that has been thought, that everything that has been done. That people in their ordinary lives live all the great ideas and all the great poems. That people, when they express a great poem, by merely lifting their fingers or by an expression of distaste on their faces, are doing so because their expression has been blocked. My character, the central character, the man that you've spent most time talking about, he's only one of six central characters in the book, is a man who at the beginning is quite an ordinary man. Everything he says is quite ordinary. Everything he does is quite ordinary. The reasons he has for doing these ordinary things are his genius. They're the genius of the ordinary man. And I was interested very much in communicating that and also in telling the story of the struggle that a man's genius has to make in order to find expression. This man's genius in the final action of the book, in this act of love, finds its expression. It vanquishes all the enemies that society ranges against expression of human personality. And that was the story that you were not interested in.
That's why
it seems to me you found certain sections repetitious. The five scenes between Harry and Julia are five rounds in a fight. Each one is different, quite totally different, one from the other. And there is no repetition in this book. This book was four times as long as it is now in the original. The amount of compression that has gone into this book is one of the things that I regret about it. I think perhaps it's not long enough because people like you, Mr. Rogers, don't understand it.
As a matter of fact, I think it's... I don't think it's a difficult book to understand. I merely think it's a difficult book to wade through. And I agree. It's not true, Mr. Wolfert, that I do not like the kind of a book which you say you tried to write. As a matter of fact, I think probably you and I, outside of the book, would agree on a great many things. It's when you try to say this thing in the book and say it in such... I don't think you're confused about it, but I think as a novelist you present a confused picture of your idea, a picture that's full of repetitions.
Well, let's concern ourselves with a couple of other characters in the book than Harry Brunner. Our discussion of Harry has given, I think, our radio audience some idea of some of the things that were bothering him, but something that bothered me were the women in the book, because they seemed to me as idealizations, that they were characters set up merely to create Harry Brunner and Anderson, and that they themselves were just backdrops for the action of the men. Now, Mr. Messenger,
no,
did you feel
that? I think if that criticism were at all valid, it might be about the daughter, Julia, but I think the mother, Deborah Anderson, the woman living with this American outcast, as it were, on this jungle island, is a remarkable character. I think she's done in very fine strokes the hatred that she feels, the love that she feels toward both her husband and her daughter are very real things. I think the way it's expressed, her willingness to sacrifice an entire native village of on the edge of their plantation is a real thing to me. I thought she came through with remarkable colors. I thought the scene where she was safe in the American army and elected to go back into the cave where the Japanese were showed a tremendous insight into the woman and the fact that even though she disliked her husband in some respects, that was where the great battleground was with him, and safety transcended that. It takes a good man to bring that to a point and to throw her in. I thought she was a real character,
Mr. Rogers.
I think Deborah Anderson is a remarkable character, but I think she's remarkable in another sense. I think, as a matter of fact, the whole Anderson family is a remarkable assemblage of befuddled and mixed and uncertain and troubled people.
Mr. Rogers, just before you go on, I think we should say that the crux of the matter, as far as the Andersons are concerned, is that Anderson had been a sea captain, that his wife feels that he always went to sea to escape something, came to this island to escape something, that he always tries to escape the consequences of his act as a man. I think that should be explained. Now go on.
Everybody's trying either to escape something or not to escape something in the book. Mr. Wolfert, there's something that puzzles me about that book very much. It seems to me you have almost two books there. You have, on the one hand, you can divide that book very sharply in two parts, and you can divide it very sharply in two ways. On the one hand, you have what I regard as admirable action scenes in the South Pacific, the sinking of the Minot and the invasion of the island. On the other hand, you have this family of Andersons, so troubled, so uncertain, so confused, covered with all sorts of psychological falderall tags. That's one way of dividing the book. Another way of dividing the book is this. You have some admirable writing, excellent writing, and you have some very bad writing. I might almost say execrable writing, I think. Now, the strange thing about those two divisions is that they coincide exactly. Where the story is about the battle in the South Pacific, you have your very fine writing. Where the story is about the Andersons and Craik and Lieutenant Sadowaka, the writing is very, very bad.
May I say, Mr. Rogers, and I want to say this in all humility, that the writing of the action scenes are in the tradition of writing. They're quite familiar to you, and that may be why you think they're good. While the writing in the sections you object to are, in a sense, I hate to use the word experimental, at least they have not been tried as often before. The ground for acceptance by you as a conventional reader isn't as thoroughly paved
may
for that kind of writing.
May I come in there and say that there is a way to divide this book into two parts, and I was acutely aware of it as I read. One part is an easily written war novel as a sop to the reader who is in a hurry so that he can get his feet right in and get all mixed up in it. He's on familiar ground. This was the good old story about the invasion of an island. Anybody can do it. Then along with that is the real book that is going to balk some people if they don't take the time to go into it. I felt just the opposite from Mr. Rogers. I felt that I could very well dispense with the war novel, having read a lot of them and having tried my own hand at it. But when we got to the real novel, Harry Bruner, a living human being in enmity to his own civilization, trying to find a cave of security to live in, then I felt I was in contact with a first-rate mind, and if he was a little turgid there, all right. I think sometimes obscurity is in itself a form of clarity, that you go muddling through and finally you get this flash of insight that he throws at you.
Well,
I like the two books.
Let me ask you this question, Mr.
Two Wolfrey. Books, though.
Two books. The point at which Harry Brunner begins to find himself is when the half-crazed major is going to shoot, and Brunner is convinced he's going to shoot an American. The major is half-crazed and thinks it's going to be a Jap. He places his body between the major's gun and the object of the shot. And through that act, he begins to reclaim himself, to put himself back through an act of love. Now, why, was the question I asked myself, did Harry Brunner do that? Why was Harry Brunner any different at the moment of that crisis than he had been in the grove of trees when he wanted to pick Julia up in his arms?
Harry actually began to find himself before the book itself begins. He made his first effort to find himself on the Minot when he tried to divorce himself from his animal fears and live on a level with God. He failed then, and in a revulsion of feeling, but still a struggle, to find himself, he embraced this woman, Tunamuza, and sought to live a totally animal life, divorced entirely from the Godhead in himself. And he failed there, just as he had failed before. And then he is numbed and shivering, but still struggling to integrate himself. And in every page of the book, the story is of not only of his struggle, but of the struggle of all the characters to find themselves, to express themselves. And 100,000 things came together for Harry. That's why I say the book
That's
is
right.
so short. 100,000 things came together for Harry at that moment on the beach when the major leveled his gun at him.
I do think this, that unless you track through the so-called dull parts that Mr. Rogers speaks of, which I found the exciting parts, then the climaxes of the battle scene have no meaning to me. I mean, they explain these things that happen in the battle scene. That's why it's good writing. The two are tied together. They're separate books. But
gentlemen, I'm sorry to interrupt, but it's time for summations. I'm going to ask each one of you to make a closing statement, a minute without interruption. And while you're preparing your statement, here's a special announcement.
Are you full of bright expectations for 1949? Have you some new books you got for Christmas piled on your bedside table? Or perhaps you'd like to share them with the disabled veterans at Halloran Hospital? The librarians at Halloran have a special system for distributing the books. Regularly, every few days, the same people go back to the same wards with their mobile libraries stacked with the books they think will interest the various men. By now, they've established a firm friendship with the many chronically invalided men whose chief interest is in books. When these portable libraries are wheeled by, all eyes look hopefully to see what's new and exciting. Taste in books varies among the veterans at Halloran as much as it varies in the outside world. But there is one standard on which many of the veterans agree. It may be severe, may even be unfair. But the Halloran disabled veterans tell us they'd rather read books written by men. Women can't write, many of the men say, and no matter how tactfully the librarians suggest that some good books have been written by women, a good many veterans won't believe it. Now, if you're a feminist or a reformer, send a new book by a woman writer. One you've really enjoyed yourself. Make the men change their minds. But if you, too, are a misogynist, choose a book by a man for the veterans. In any case, send a new book, fiction or nonfiction, a funny book or a moving book. But make it a new book to brighten the wintry days ahead for the men who sacrificed themselves for you. All you have to do is pick a good one and address it to Halloran Hospital, Staten Island, New York.
And now, Mr. Michener, you have 1 minute to sum up An Act of Love by Ira Wolfert.
Obviously, I have to agree with some of Mr. Rogers' acute observations. This isn't an easy book. I think the publishers were wise to bring it out in midwinter, because it isn't a book to be read in one afternoon during summer vacation. This is a real book. If we are to be adults in an adult nation, we simply have got to have some books that test our capacities. I recommend Ira Wolfert's as being in that class for the following reasons. One, it deals with the central conflicts of modern living. Two, it is one of the best analyses I have so far seen of minority groups in modern American life. Three, it explains one of the great mysteries of our time, how men without essential bravery or patriotism are willing and capable of fighting a war successfully. Four, in the analysis of Mr. and Mrs. Anderson, it explains a lot about modern marriage, but above all, it explains how love, that simple commodity which most of us never understand, can rebuild a character. A book which can accomplish these things is worth reading, even if the going is tough now and then.
All right, Mr. Rogers, for your 1 minute summary.
I recommend half of Mr. Wolfert's book. Recommend it very highly. I'd like to discourage you from reading, I'd like to persuade you not to bother with the other half. It seems to me a book in which, in the part in which that Mr. Michener likes, a book in which Mr. Wolfert has shot the works. He's told all. And often enough, when you tell nothing. A book has got to be channeled. It's got to go between banks straight to its objective. And this floods out all over the place and peters out. And a half of it is, but the half that Mr. Michener doesn't think so highly of, a half of it is very fine writing, the sort of writing we had seen before in Mr. Wolfert's Battle for the Solomons and Guerrilla in the Philippines. Extraordinarily brilliant work. The other half of it is so bad that it almost seems as though the same man could not have written it.
Thank you, and now, Mr. Wolfert.
In sum, I'd like to say or tell you that this story began in my mind on a day in July 1943 on the island of New Georgia in the Solomons. It was a tank fight that day, and the fight began with a burst of fire that took off the top of the head of a young man walking in front of me. And he dropped, and we all dropped. We went on, but he remained. The battle ended 5 hours later, and I made my way back to the point from which it had begun and found the young man still alive, still struggling to remain alive. There was no hope for him. The doctors, busy where they could be useful, wouldn't even look at him. He was medically a dead man. His grave had been dug. A chaplain was sitting on the dirt beside the grave, waiting to read over him. He was classified as dead in that department, too. But he wasn't dead. He was still struggling to remain alive. I remember that place very clearly. It was the bottom of the world there. Jungle. A swamp in the jungle, with the war stuck in it. It was a place where all the enemies of human life were gathered together, and they had done their worst to him. They had torn off the top of his head, but he was still alive, still struggling to remain alive.
I'm sorry, gentlemen, but time's up for both the author and his critics, and here's our announcer to tell you what lies ahead on our program.
Our guest author next week will be Monty Sohn, former newspaper and advertising man, and now an executive in one of our major industrial corporations. Mr. Sohn's new novel is called The Flesh in Mary Duncan. Be sure to be with us then to hear Monty Sohn meet his critics. And now back to John McCaffrey.
For closing, I'd like to thank Ira Wolfert for coming here today to discuss his new book, An Act of Love, and to thank you, James Michener, and UWG Rogers for joining us. This is John McCaffrey saying good afternoon for The Author Meets the Critics.
The Author Meets the Critics came to you today from the RCA Exhibition Hall in Radio City, is produced by Martin Stone, and was directed by Lee Jones. This is Mel Brandt speaking. This is NBC. Hear Horace Heidt today.